Eso.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? Lying down, always to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom, or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks with guts defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I wanna shake your hand. Singing and lying down, always to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom, or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Now the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to seek our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. So get courage from your conviction. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down, always to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom, or march that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Well, it's about 20 to 12 on September 2nd, 2003.
We're in front of Uptown Jean Company, coming soon on Pacific Avenue. Gag Me with a Spoon. And we're talking with
John Krause.
And we're also listening in.
We're back.
And Seth Maddox.
And you are.
Okay.
So what's happening? What's happening?
We're just, about, what was it, yesterday or the day before?
The day before.
The day before yesterday, we were sitting in the park and the cops came up for one of my friends drinking and arrested him and then just totally tackled and beat up one of my other friends and threw him into jail for like 5 hours.
Actually, what happened was they arrested the really jerk, our really jerk friend, and our other friend came up and asked him why they were arresting him. And they just started beating him. They just fucking rushed and tackled him, started beating him, twisting his arm. And he didn't know what was going on. He was sitting there. He even told the police officer he still loved him. I mean, and this officer still was continuing to just terrorize him.
You were a witness to this?
Yes.
How close were you?
I was probably within 100 feet.
And you were within 20 feet?
Yeah.
And again, your name is?
John Cuff.
And your name is?
I'm Zeth Maddox.
And what time of day was this?
This was close to dusk. It wasn't really dark. It was about 5 or 6.
Yeah. And what park was it?
San Lorenzo Park.
Where were you in the park?
Under the bridge.
And how many people were present?
Five.
About 7 or 8.
Yeah, maybe. There were about 7 or 8.
They made a complaint about it to the cop station.
And were these deputies or
they made a call to the?
We're talking people in blue or people in khaki. Were they cops or were they deputies?
No, they were cops.
You notice the names of any of the police officers?
Yeah. yet again, the one-armed bandit with his...
I recall a month ago, on July 16th, when there was the jaywalking massacre, you had, 13 of these numbers on your arm. You've just rolled up your sleeve, and you've got some marking.
71 and 167.
These two officers, you say, assaulted both individuals or one individual?
They handcuffed one, and then they assaulted the other one.
And the name of the man they assaulted?
Tripp.
And the man, name of the man they handcuffed?
Justin, I don't know his last name.
And what happened to Tripp? Is that the name of the fellow?
He went to jail and got released 5 hours later.
And did he have any injuries that you could see? Did you talk to him after he was released?
I don't think he had any injuries, but I'm not sure.
I don't think he sustained permanent injuries, but he did have, bruises and bad, he was walking funny. And he's got a lot of emotional injuries, too. I mean, it's mostly in his head because... He can't just be beat and then not have anything wrong with you inside, you know? It's not all going to be outside injury.
And what was the did you hear any dialogue between the officers before this happened?
No, actually we didn't. We just...
Is that because you were too far away or because it didn't happen?
Between when they arrested the first guy and beat our other friend, there was no dialogue. It was just, why are you arresting my friend? What? And then they just ran over and just, that's how it went.
How exactly was he? Describe if you can in detail how your friend Tripp was approached. What happened?
He's standing maybe approximately, about 10 feet away from the officer, asking why he was arresting my friend Justin, and then that's when the cops bomb rushed him.
And say that again?
That's when the cops bomb rushed him.
And what exactly did the police, did you notice which police officer did what? Or?
Both of them.
What did they do?
They both grabbed him and started twisting his arms and pushing him on the ground with their knees and everything.
And what did they say to him, anything? Did they say anything to him as they did this?
No.
And how long did this all take?
A few minutes. I got a ticket that same day
for
consuming alcohol in public.
Open container?
Yeah.
Now, were you intoxicated or were you simply having
a drink of wine?
And who else was present? And can you give the names of anyone else who witnessed this?
There was a bunch of other people. I don't know how many names for sure.
Okay. Yeah, you might ask them if they want to be witnesses to what happened. And you say a complaint was filed?
Yes.
Verbal or written?
Two yuppies went down to the police station and then our other friend called in.
You know the names of the yuppies?
No, I don't.
You know what they looked like?
No. My other friends do.
You have a sign that says, get down with the kick down money for supplies.
Art supplies.
For art supplies. So you're an artist?
Yeah.
What kind of art do you do?
Tin candelabrums and lanterns.
And how long have you been on the mall here?
3 months.
Any hassles?
A lot, yeah.
Anything? Prior to this incident, was there anything in the last week that you've noticed that's happened?
There's a lot of conspiracy between the cops. And that's speaking from a real level. They're constantly watching, harassment of just watching us for incessant amount of times, which is harassment.
You personally or specific other people?
Me, everybody else, just obsessively, because they can.
All righty, well, I appreciate the input, and do you have any suggestions as to who I should talk to further about this?
Tripp. He'll probably be down there in a little while. He's a shorter guy, about this tall.
Was he Caucasian?
He's Caucasian, but he's looks pretty dirty.
Dirty Caucasian. I'll keep that in mind. And we've been talking with?
John Krause.
Thanks, John. Talking with?
Albert.
And Albert, you say you have some knowledge of a chair that, is it the police department or the deputies we're talking about?
It's the sheriff's department. It's when they take you into the holding tanks. If they feel that you're a threat or you're going to be irate, they strap you in a chair where it's really uncomfortable and you get strapped down. They put a hood over your head and keep you in a room for, I think it's 15 hours, and every hour they just come and check on you. They lift up the little flap where they can look into the room and they shut it and they leave you there till they feel you're fit enough to come out. And the chair is really, it's built to be uncomfortable. Like, it's at a, where you put your bottom, it's at a, like a, say like a 45 degree angle.
30,
something like that, and it's really uncomfortable. It's all plastic, it's all squared off, You got I think they restrain your legs, your arms, your waist, your chest, and everything strapped down so you can't move, and they put a hood over your face. Yeah. I don't know why, but I mean, I've been in the chair because they felt that I was a threat. But.
Now, in the circumstances when you were put in a chair, what had you been arrested for?
I had been arrested for, once was for disturbing the peace because I wanted to talk to a deputy about what he said I did because they picked me up for supposedly being at a place where drugs are sold and I was just going to the metro. And they grabbed me.
A racial profiling deal?
I don't know. It might have been. I mean, there was a lot of guys.
Latino to me, man.
Yeah, I am Latino. Mexican. I mean, yeah, it could have been. I mean, the cops done it to me before. It's not been the first. I got beat up probably like 2 years. No, like in 1997 at Soquel High. And the sheriff deputy did get fired from Soquel High. But
the sheriff's deputy beat you up at Soquel High?
Yeah.
What was the name of that deputy?
McConnell.
And your full name is?
I don't want to say my full
name. No problem. So you've been in the chair and you were arrested. Were you verbally abusive to the deputies? Were you fighting with them? Not that there's necessarily justification for that kind of restraint anyway, but was there any... Well, can you give us some background as to what happened before you were put in the chair?
No, I just told them that whatever they did was wrong and that I wasn't just going to sit here and not do nothing about it. And I don't know, I didn't mean like I was going to fight or anything. I just told them that basically that what they were doing was wrong and I wasn't just going to let it happen, that I was going to seek some help or something, you know?
And how long were you in the chair?
15 hours.
And when was this?
This was like probably like 2 years ago.
Yeah, and the charge was disturbing the peace?
It got dropped.
So you were actually held in the chair for 15 hours on a charge that was eventually dropped. And you say the charge came because you tried to speak up to a deputy about this incident about being present in a place where drugs were sold?
No, I was just walking by and they grabbed me. They asked me what my name was and they said I was some Francisco something. And they sat me down at the metro and they put me in the cop car. And I was asking them why they were taking me, and they just ended up taking me to the county jail, and they held me first in the chair for 15 hours, then placed me into into a unit, and then after that I went to court, and the judge dropped the charges and let me go.
You're talking about the disturbing the peace charge.
Yeah.
You say this has happened another time as well?
No, I got, I've gotten stopped for being with five friends, because if you're with more than four people, it's considered a gang. You're walking.
Clearly a gang member with those dark glasses. It's obvious. It's a giveaway.
Yeah. But yeah, they just figured that we were gang members because we're Mexican and we were walking down the street. I don't know.
Any hassles in the last year?
No, not in the last year.
Would you say the situation has improved generally or for you personally, or is it just coincidental because of what you're doing? Because of where you happen to be?
It's just I've been doing my own thing, working, and I haven't had time to have fun, you know, or walk around anywhere, you know. I don't walk around. I don't usually like to walk around downtown because it's just not, I don't feel safe.
Because you're afraid you might be attacked by some of these dirty hippie types, these questionable beggars who hang out on the streets, these characters with tape recorders?
No, none of that. No, I don't know. Some of the sheriffs or police officers that work down here, they've given me a hard time, so I don't feel like coming down here that often. I come down to get coffee, that's about it.
And we are, in fact, in front of the Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company.
Yeah.
You're under arrest, of course, for talking to a man with a taper.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
And again, we've been talking with...
Albert.
Thanks, Albert. We're talking with that foul criminal who's looking for work.
Yeah. It's hell looking for work nowadays. There's no work out there.
Well, for a man who abuses the police with a fuck the pig sign in his hat, there will be not only no work, there shall be no bread, no candle, no warmth within 20 miles of Santa Cruz for your kind.
Of course.
So I don't, you're pursuing your case to have this, actually the whole thing has pretty much been dropped, but now you're...
One ticket has been dropped, but yes, we are pursuing it, because we're not going to have it swept under the carpet. And hush-hush stuff, and so, because it's our rights that I'm fighting for, so.
You're here, and your next court date is?
The 26th of this month.
At?
At the courthouse.
At what time?
I don't know, 8:30 in the morning, maybe.
You better find out, that's all I can say. I think it's 10 o'clock, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
And we're talking with?
John Mauer.
What kind of work are you looking for, John, in case somebody wants to help out?
Any kind, no real heavy labor. My lower back won't allow it for a while, but anything. Dishes, prep cook, cooking, windows. I hate painting, but painting will work.
Phone number?
423-1747, I think.
Or a voicemail?
457-9754, extension 1361.
Thanks, John.
Yes, you're welcome.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. A couple of interviews from the street in the last week. Last, John Mauer. Before that, you heard Albert talking about the chair, the device apparently used as a restraining measure in the jail, but also as a form of pretrial or no-trial punishment, if Albert's account is correct. And I've heard about this chair from other sources, too. Obviously, we need to interview someone in the sheriff's department. Perhaps Sheriff Mark Tracy will be so good as to explain the chair to us. Maybe a Public Records Act request might be helpful there. I'll make a note of that. Maybe we can actually get that done in the future. There's a Public Records Act request that's coming due tomorrow, on Monday. That'll be the 10-day deadline for the city to respond to a request about homeland security measures and funding being sought by the police, fire, and other departments of our city, at the same time as many local members of our community are concerned about the abuses under the Patriot Act and the abuses of the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act, of course, being the law that essentially vastly extends the definition of domestic terrorist, giving the federal government extensive powers. And we tried last November to restrict local participation, local government participation, but that measure was somewhat neutered and castrated, might be a little strong, but the teeth were pulled, as one person put it, from that measure by Vice Mayor, soon-to-be Mayor Scott Kennedy, who is apparently reintroducing something, maybe, although it isn't on this city council agenda on Tuesday, as it was, I guess, everyone had expected it was going to be, maybe on the second Tuesday, fourth Tuesday, actually, the second council meeting of the month. But Kennedy has said in a Good Times interview that he has some real concerns about mandating behavior by city employees, as Arcata, the city of Arcata, has done in essentially saying to the heads of city departments, you will not cooperate with unconstitutional Patriot Act type requests and behavior from the federal government, or you will be in fact in violation of the law and theoretically liable to a fine. Santa Cruz activists have tried to do that, and they haven't so far succeeded. I filed a Public Records Act request, which sought to find out what kind of funding the police department, the fire department, and other organizations, government subdivisions here are seeking from the federal government. And I actually got a brief email from the city manager's office, which didn't really give me too much information. Tomorrow is the day they're supposed to give me more information or a reasonable reason why they can't, and so I'll try to report on that on Thursday for those who are listening and pass that on to all the relevant groups, including the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and other groups I'm not terribly enamored of at the moment, but still I have some respect for the work all groups are trying to do. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm Robert Norse. You have 3 hours ahead of you from 10 to 1 when you can call the station and talk about the local civil rights activities or lack thereof. You can talk about other issues. I'm particularly concerned with folks who are out of doors, houseless folks, sometimes called homeless folks, nomadic people, folks who are poor and low income, who, in my experience, face a special kind of discrimination, class discrimination from Santa Cruz authorities, whether it's the police or government agencies or private merchants. That's the subject that interests me, and I guess the subject that interests me is changing those kinds of discriminatory behaviors, making it not illegal to be homeless. To take the name of the August report and turn it around,
That was a report by the National Coalition for the Homeless that came out last month about how there's been an intensification in the last 18 months, a serious intensification of anti-homeless laws across the country. Obviously, the homeless may be the latest terrorist threat, or possibly a threat to the businesses in terms of the potential economic gains that the businesses see that they're not making, instead of holding accountable wartime spending and massive police budget priorities, even as crime is dropping, massive numbers of people in jail under the drug war. No, instead it's poor and homeless people that need to be restrained. It's street performers that need to be kept 10 feet away from buildings and moved along every hour. It's young people that need to be ID checked and have ban orders issued against them for sales of small quantities of marijuana. That's not the face of reactionary Mississippi or the Midwest. That's the face of Santa Cruz, folks. It's getting worse and worse. We've had a series of downtown ordinances put into place, which I've talked about repeatedly, which have no bearing at all on real criminal behavior, or very little. They don't affect shoplifting. They don't affect vandalism. They don't affect sexual harassment or violence. They do affect the ability of poor people to be in public spaces without harassment from the police. And the harassment, of course, has intensified, I don't want to say tenfold or a hundredfold, I don't know how much, but significantly. Indeed, the number of tickets issued in the last year has gone up 30% by the police chief's own standards, and the supposed review by the city council was simply not done. Scott Kennedy simply wouldn't do it. He's the vice mayor. He's the person that I think ran interference on this issue by issuing a whole series of kind of memos, FYIs, not subject to public discussion, not subject to any kind of council debate or input, but simply his own way of kind of dismissing the issue. And he was on free radio with Mike Rotkin debating activist Joe Williams and dissing those who suggested, like myself, that there's a criminalization of the homeless happening in Santa Cruz, a continuing ignoring of the basic civil rights we've tried to have restored over the last decade, like the ending the sleeping provisions of the Santa Cruz camping ordinance, the no sleeping provisions that say if you sleep after 11 o'clock at night before 8:30 in the morning on any public property or even in a private vehicle that is properly parked and licensed and registered, that's still illegal unless you do it, of course, only three nights per calendar month in someone's driveway with the written permission of both the landlord and the tenant. I wonder how many people have that. And that's, of course, for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz, of which 39 have legal places to sleep tonight under the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. Don't believe me? Call Karen Brock, who is actually paid by the city under the administration of Ken Cole at the Homeless Resource Center, to try to help folks like that. And there are space for 39 people tonight out of the 1,500 to 2,000. Don't believe that figure? Call Paul Brindell of the Community Action Board. You can talk with him, get a figure. We don't really know the exact figure. We can only estimate, but there have been censuses done in the last 3 or 4 years. In case you want to reach any of these people, Community Action Board number is 457-1741. And just leave a message for Paul. You'd like to talk to him. Or you can call Ken Cole at the Homeless Resource Center, the homeless ghetto that's been set up on the outside of town to make sure that the homeless people don't wander downtown too much, along, of course, with a whole series of restrictive rules which make it hostile to them downtown, make it much more likely for them to be hassled by the police. His number is 458-6020, 458-6020. And if you miss any of these numbers, you could, of course, call the all-purpose HUF number. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's easy to remember. It's 423-HUF, 423-H-U-F-F. But if you're not in a phone-calling mood, and you probably won't get anybody today, since this is Sunday, you won't get anyone on the HUF line because it's a voicemail, but I will return any call to the HUF line, you can call the station. And the phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. If you're out of the area, the area code is 831-427-3772. I'll try to keep my eye on the blinking light here so I don't miss your call. A little slow this morning. You are also listening to Free Radio at www.freakradio.org, perhaps. That's our internet streaming address, www.freakradio.org. We stream all over the world, and we've been picked up as far away as Australia. People have called the show and talked to us. Olympia, Washington gets us. We're rebroadcast there at 91.3. Mojo Radio in Point Arena at 87.9 rebroadcasts. If I'm reading this properly, is it Post World, Bust World, Test World? It's some kind of world radio at 87.9 in Seattle, Washington. Also rebroadcasts some Free Radio Santa Cruz shows live. So there is a network of independent radio stations, and hopefully there will continue to be such a network, though, as you regular listeners may know, 10 days ago, actually more, like I guess it's 11 or 12 days ago now, we received a 10-day notice from the Federal Communications Commission, the bunch of corporate hacks who are seeking to monopolize the airwaves and destroy community radio stations and frighten away those they have not already intimidated. We are, of course, one of the oldest, if not the oldest, radio station in the country that's been continuously broadcasting. I think there are actually a couple others that are broadcasting longer. But we've been doing it 24 hours a day. We've been doing it from a collective standpoint. We've been doing it with a lot of free speech. We're not totally free speech, it's true. We don't have Nazi speech on the radio. We don't have hate speech. We don't have a lot of commercial speech. So there are definitely guidelines about hate speech on free radio. But there's a lot of free speech here nonetheless, and you can pretty much say what you want, at least for a while, until the Stalinist inner circle gets a hold of you. No, I mean, there is a lot of free speech. There are, of course, there are problems, and I've pointed those out in the past. I will continue to point them out. Our problem right now is the threat of federal seizure of our equipment. And that is something that could happen at any time. And if you are tuned to free radio and you hear sounds of the broadcaster shouting for help, they're breaking down our door, help, help, they're coming to the studio, we will be broadcasting the top secret location of the studio, and you can hustle on down here with your video camera, your sign, your Rotten Tomatoes, whatever you got. You can inform other media. You can dig into your pockets so we can create a second transmitter fast and set it up and continue the radio station and continue communicating the kind of information that and opinion that I think there would be a great void around if we weren't here. And hopefully there'll be other radio stations taking our place or actually supplementing us. There used to be a station in Big Sur, there used to be a station in Watsonville, there may well be. The V-Man keeps up on that, and you should check out his show, 5:30 every weekday afternoon from 5:30 to 6. He does a great radio show, which I never hear, but nonetheless I hear about, and sometimes I hear snatches of it on free radio. And of course, you're tuned to free radio at 96.3 FM. And again, the number to call in if you've got updates or information is 427-3772. If you want to talk on the air, that's the live number. If you want information about free radio, there's another number to call. That's our voicemail. Grab a pencil and I'll give you the voicemail in case you haven't already got it. It's 427-4523, 427-4523, which is a place where you can leave public service announcements. You can offer things for donation. You can complain and grumble. You can leave anonymous death threats. You can do whatever you want on that voicemail. Hopefully you won't get any death threats, but it's essentially an opportunity for us to, for you to talk to us without having to talk to a live person or perhaps be embarrassed or say something on the air, or engage in sort of a more confidential kind of communication if that's what you'd like. You can also have stuff broadcast by leaving, as I said, public service announcements at 427-4523. If you want to give us some financial support, and I know this sounds like we're calling crying wolf and doing the old endless telecast telefund raising nonsense, but we need it. You know, Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you write it out to, or FRSC, and the P.O. box that we're at is 7507. Yeah, it's Santa Cruz 95061. So, well, I found myself a new disc, pretty vanilla stuff, but sometimes I got a few witty things to say. Here's the Capital Steps latest disc, Between Iraq and a Hard Place. We're going to play a few of these cuts in the course of this show while we wait for the flood of phone calls. 427-3772 if you'd like to flood us.
That other countries are down on the U.S. A land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way. And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103, and I'll gladly park so close to you when you pull out you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV. Congestion, but hey, I'll get there alive. So don't pester me with questions like, what would Gandhi drive? And you won't catch me in Starbucks if I need a drink or snack. When I bought this ship, she came equipped with a Starbucks in the back. And I'm proud to be an American with a car that fits my rear. The cash I put down could have fed a town in Somalia for a year. I'd gladly go and fight Saddam. He'd lose the war with me. You'll be stuck in mud when he sends his gun, but not my SUV.
We're talking to the recurring Kuo here in front of the German World War II helmet statue or whatever it is, this blob in front of the Pacific Trading Company. And you are, it looks like a safe 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 feet away from the building. But are you 16 feet away from the crosswalk? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14. You're 14 feet away. And I don't see a soliciting sign, although perhaps, please give me money or marijuana. Thank you. I take that back. Officer, take him into custody. Have you been hassled today?
Not yet. I'm trying not to be. I have to go to court at 1:30 anyway.
For
trying to sell a t-shirt supposedly in February and a headband.
So you are actually having you have a trial?
Yeah.
And who's court?
Department 10. I don't know. I was going to take your advice.
Mulligan's court. You got Mulligan. God help you. You've got to disqualify Mulligan. You have to do it at the arraignment. You can't do it. You can't wait till the trial.
Oh, well, then maybe I have.
Arraignment or before the arraignment?
If it's the one I'm thinking of, then he was gone anyway, and there was a guy named Patterson.
Oh, Patterson, perhaps.
I'm not sure, but otherwise, I was going to take your advice, and if my lawyer has anything to say about it, I was going to say I took your legal advice as opposed to his. Or if he wanted to, like, go against me disqualifying him, because that's what I heard from you before.
So, what? Tell us about this case coming up. You're accused of selling a t-shirt?
Yeah, Officer Tomaselli tried to give me a ticket for selling a t-shirt when I had no such intention. My old t-shirt used to say, "We'll work for weed," and I had it out, and then the same one, I had a Whitesnake t-shirt out, just for showing it off. And they gave me a ticket for trying to merchandise it, so now...
Where were you when this happened?
Right here. Right exactly here.
And now, did she give you a warning that it was illegal to, what, have a t-shirt nearby that might be construed as being there for sale?
I'm not sure what the hell these people are talking about ever. You know, it was confusing.
So you were, Tomaselli told you that, did she see you ask for money for the t-shirt?
No, I wasn't selling a t-shirt. I wasn't asking for money for it. She would never see shit like that, you know? It's just like pot. I don't never sell pot. I'm just a consumer.
But what did she accuse you of doing?
Merchandising.
Displaying or actually having sale?
Merchandising. That's what she said.
And your name on the court docket, your official name is?
Reverend Christian Frederick C. Grave.
Wow. Kuo for sure.
Please.
Well, I wish you luck, Kuo, and who knows, I may show up in court to harass you if they let you get out of this and continue with your criminal career here.
Well, I got a lawyer, so that should help. But like I said, it's about 1:30, and I do plan on being there.
What lawyer do you have?
Do you know a guy named William Belport?
I do not, but there are plenty of lawyers I don't know. Yeah, some more I don't want to know.
Then maybe you'll meet him.
Okay, so maybe we'll see you at 1:30. It's about 5 after 12.
And we did see Kuo at 1:30, we being myself, and I think there were several other people. Becky Johnson was one of them. A couple other folks showed up as well. And this was in the basement courtroom where I recommend people disqualify, again, the referee, John Mulligan, Meat Grinder Mulligan, as I call him, who is, in fact, retiring at some point. At least that's what I've heard from a number of court officials, clerks, and so forth. Actually, I'm not quite sure where I heard it, but I think that was one of the sources. But it's it was interesting to watch his amiable manner as he kind of rolled out the fines and proceeded. I think, actually, Becky Johnson did a kind of she studied it somewhat more closely than I did. The case against Kuo was dismissed because Officer Tomaselli, who is a shorter woman, who has occasionally you may have seen her at city council meetings, and she was on the under Baker for a while, as all the officers who are downtown apparently are. I don't know if they ever get rid of Baker, at least, as to say, move him somewhere else, retrain him, put him into useful work in some other function. I'm really persuaded, and I don't feel this is a function of prejudice, but rather of experience, that the sergeant needs another line of work, and we need another person in that job. But anyway, Tomaselli is gone. She left the police department, and what happened was Sergeant Baker came into court, and he announced that that case was being dropped because Tomaselli was not there, and therefore he couldn't pursue all the elements of the crime. And there was a second case that day, and actually I think we may be playing a tape on that one, so I'm going to I won't go into it at any length, but it involved the protest in front of the Pacific Trading Company, the company that has given us the elimination of the seating space at a cost of more than $7,000 of our taxpayer money as part of the anti-street performer, anti-homeless pogrom, a series of laws that's been put into place downtown. He was a man who just sort of helped carry a battery to the audio-video display that we had near the Pacific Trading Company, where we were showing a video about police misconduct on June 29th or 30th this summer. And Sergeant Baker apparently spotted him and ticketed him for either, I guess, for sitting or leaning against the railing, which had been moved 4 inches so people could not legally sit on the walnut planter area in front of the Pacific Trading Company. And that case was also dropped because Tomaselli was another vital element in that crime wave that went down there and bringing those sit criminals and those, I guess, T-shirt criminals to justice. So that's kind of the update on that. And there'll be, I think we actually did an interview with a guy named Joe, who was the fellow who got the ticket for leaning slash sitting on the, he got it for sitting. Leaning is legal, sitting is not. But he was leaning, he says, not sitting. Boy, the absurd bullshit that these cops are engaging in downtown simply to please and pander to the fears of a few merchants and the fashions of a few politicians is just incredible. So, let's take another Capital Steps break. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming soon to a record store near Baghdad, direct from their sold-out tour of Iraq, it's the group that's mind-sweeping the nation. Please give it up for Hans Blix and the Inspectors!
What you hid, baby, I'll find it. That locked door, I'll look behind it. No more stalling, we're gonna inspect.
Just little Blix.
Inspect.
Just little Blix.
INSPECT, tell me where the warheads be. INSPECT,
show me how mean you can be.
Sock it to me, 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 sock it to me. We're gonna inspect.
Oh!
Well, so what if they can't find a dirty bomb? They'll find a way into your hearts with songs like this.
I've been looking for scuds in all the wrong places.
All we can find are some cases of harmless wool and silos full of things marked nothing in here.
I'll find those scuds before they attack me.
We'll search each baby milk factory. We'll get all the facts.
Or I'll be back.
Wait, there's more! Hear Vice President Cheney and his classic rendition of Duke of Oil. And the latest song about the Vice President's military plans.
Hussein, did you see the fighters? If you need a light, you won't even need a lighter. A couple of dozen planes tonight are being flown. You're gonna hear fantastic sounds of predatory drones. Well, say, Saddam, have you seen them yet? Looking so close now.
Cheney and the Jets.
That's right, it's all here on one album. Act now and we'll throw in the Hans Blix special biography, Between Iraq and a Hard Place. It's a surefire hit with this theme song from the Beatles.
I want to hold you. I want to hold you. I want to hold you.
Hans.
Not available in stores.
It's about 5 after 12. We're talking to the free agent attorney. Your name, Matt.
Come on, what are you going to play this on?
Free radio. Yeah. Now, you were in court for a case, but the case got dismissed.
Correct.
And this was, what, an excessive noise case or something?
Right, it was, 9.36.020 Santa Cruz Municipal Code.
And this was in the court of Meat Grinder Mulligan, as we call him?
What do you call him? A judge, or what do you call him? Commissioner?
He's a referee.
Referee Mulligan.
Referee. Although, he really has, should we say, he doesn't do much refereeing. He's kind of more of an accountant who racks up the fines. That's my experience with him. I noticed he was holding trials in the absence of defendants. Did you notice that today? When the defendants weren't present, he would hold the trial anyway, find the defendant guilty, and sentence the defendant. Whereas, in any other court I've ever seen, they'll issue a warrant for the guy who doesn't show up, but they won't hold the trial in his absence. I mean, yeah, I don't think you can do that. I mean, I haven't checked the law on it, but I'm suspicious, frankly.
Yeah, I was trying to find what the burden of proof was for the state before doing this, because I've only worked in superior court before.
Beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right. And
criminal case.
And who had to prove what and so forth.
Except
and I was
Mulligan always says, as you may have heard, proceed to give us the facts of the case. Every officer who comes up there. He doesn't say that to the defense. He says that to the officers, the police department, the prosecution.
Well, it's the person who brings the case burden to prove their case.
Right, but he didn't say, you can tell us your allegations, tell us your case.
Oh, I see what
he
you
said,
mean.
He said, tell us the facts. So, what was your impression of the court? Is your first time in Mulligan's court?
Correct. It was interesting. It was a little bit more give and take than I'm used to. I usually work in family court. A little bit less formal. I normally used to do domestic violence, and so I'm on the lookout for judges who accommodate pro per petitioners. So this was completely a switched situation where my client was in fact the defendant, but it looks like most of the defendants in there are pro per, in other words, represent themselves. And I think it's helpful, his little speech that he gave in the beginning to explain what happened, and it seemed like he was very accommodating with people that were not understanding. You know, he wasn't expecting them to know the rules of evidence and proper objections and stuff like that. So, I thought that was good.
You had a positive impression of referee Mulligan.
I had a positive impression.
Not having been around for most of his regime.
I had a positive impression of the court in general.
Right.
Just as a bystander, my take on the cases were not always exactly what his take was.
Would you have been harsher, or would you have been mellower?
I think I would have been mellower on a few of the cases. But,
The county needs your money. I'm sorry, try to get it together. We've been talking with
Julie Hoffner.
And Julie, you are in fact an attorney looking for work. So call Julie and fork out your bucks. You have a number you want to give out for business, people seeking business?
On the air? Do I want to give it on the air? Sure. But I don't give free legal advice, all right?
Forget it, folks.
I need to work for, I have a child I need to support. I'm just the same, you know, people don't work for free. So if somebody, we can work things out, though. I don't maybe charge the market rate. You can call 239-1196.
There you are. Thank you, Julie.
Sure.
You can hang with us.
But what I was going to tell you is, do you ever...
He's also a singer, and will you be, in fact, doing a performance next Monday?
I'm going to try to go to the Union Monday night.
And what kind of... Do you want to give us a little sample here?
I sing standards.
Standards is, for example?
Standards is, like, the kind of stuff that Harry Connick Jr. does. Diane Reeves, that kind of stuff.
Diane Reeves. Again, she's using names I never heard of. Give me an example. What kind of a tune? Are we talking about Way Down Upon the Swami River?
No. That's more like Americana. Like Broadway, like Cole Porter, Gershwin.
Come on, hit that melody.
That kind of thing.
Down in Broadway. That sort of thing?
You're hilarious.
Well, if worse comes to worse, sort of a song and then emotion and then...
See, I've been on Radio Free Santa Cruz before in that production, Nicholas's production.
She was on a Homeless in Outer Space.
Yes.
We're not going to send her to outer space for having been on that production either.
It was a good production.
And indeed, a number of people found it a stimulating production.
Well, inviting them to leave the room, maybe.
Not quite. Well, we won't comment on that at this time. But yeah, so you're an actress as well as a performer.
See, so if people need me for voice, I can do radio voices. People need me for that, I can do that.
Okay, well, it's about 3:05. We're in the Cattle Prod Cafe here, as I call the cafe in the basement of the county building. And we're talking to a man who's just come out of court, who has his case was dismissed because Sergeant Baker revealed that Officer Tomaselli, the short female officer that we all know and some of us love, is no longer on the force. This is, of course, a story in and of itself, which we will, of course, investigate more deeply at another time. But right now we're talking with...
Toto Joe.
And you, sir, were in court for the crime of?
They said sitting on a fence.
You were talking about the railing next to the Pacific Trading Company and that planter, which was, of course, the subject of so much controversy in the last few months.
Yeah, but I don't know about the controversial part.
But you were, in fact, present on June 29th or June 30th when... I guess a bunch of us were tabling in front of the Pacific Trading Company urging a boycott of bigotry there.
Right. That's where you guys were at. That drew attention to me, and I went over there and sort of wanted to know what you guys were doing.
I think I ran into you down the corner on Cooper and Pacific, and you agreed to help us move some stuff, including a battery, which we were using for this television setup for the video against police misconduct, to the area in front of the Pacific Trading Company.
Yeah, I agreed to help you move because you thought it would be a better idea to move up there.
And what you want to give us an account of what happened then?
I was just standing there, and I saw a battery on the ground, and it needed to be on the table, so I picked it up, put it on the table. At the same time, I saw a policeman.
Sergeant Baker?
Sergeant Baker over there, Marini, sitting outside watching and making a phone call. And after I put the battery on the table, I leaned back against the fence, and here comes two officers, a gentleman and a lady. And they gave me a ticket.
And they gave you a ticket, I believe, for violating 9.50.020, which is conduct on public property, specifically, supposedly, I guess, sitting on the railing of the Pacific Trading Company, which the Pacific Trading Company had the city move, even though it's public property. They had destroyed public seating space in order to make it illegal to do what you were doing, I guess, was not, you weren't actually sitting.
Illegal. It's not
leaning. You weren't actually sitting.
I was leaning, but the thing is, it's not illegal because... They're supposed to tell you that you can't sit or lean on it.
That's right. Part of the code section specifies that after being informed by a law enforcement officer, then it is illegal to be there.
If you're staying on there, then they could give you a ticket.
But what happened to you?
He made a phone call. A gentleman and a woman, a cop, walked by and walked towards me and gave me the ticket.
So did they notify you that it was illegal?
He said it's illegal for you to lean on or sit on the railing.
And then what did you do?
And I said, I didn't know that. I said, I'm from San Jose. I don't know what's going on here.
And what did they do then?
They just wrote me a ticket.
So they didn't give you any interval or opportunity to... Did you continue sitting there after they told you this? Or did
no,
you...
they didn't. They did. I stood up. Because they said it's against the law to sit there or lean on, so I got up.
They gave you a ticket anyway.
They gave me a ticket anyway.
Did this seem to be a decision by former officer Tomaselli, or who seemed to make this decision? Was it the male officer?
I think Sergeant Baker made the phone call.
I think Sergeant Baker made the decision.
He made this decision, made a phone call to the lady and gentleman cop.
And Sergeant Baker informed you it was illegal to sit
Sergeant
on the rail?
He didn't say anything to me. He was sitting down at Marini's about half a block.
He was probably busy enjoying some ice cream. He often does that. Well, I don't know about ice cream, but he seems to be in very good terms with merchants, such as... I understand he's got quite a taste for sushi after his Sushi Now experience.
He likes his sushi. Anyway, he... The ticket was already signed by him.
So he was pretty quick at on the draw, that Sergeant Baker.
Yeah, I don't know who the other police officers were, but...
Maybe he were pre-signed tickets ready to pick up scofflaws like yourself. Becky, did you were there this day. This is the same day that I guess two of us got citations for having no amplified sound permit and daring to play a video about police misconduct on the sidewalk. Did you see any of this incident with it? Again, we've been talking with...
Pardon?
You're talking with
Joe.
And did you see any of this?
Yeah, I saw a little bit. it was funny because we were doing tabling and showing a video, and there was no civil disobedience plan that day. No plans for any ticketing or arrests. And next thing you knew, it was like this crime wave with Joe getting a ticket for leaning up against the railing, and you and Jim Ross getting tickets for amplified sound. Although it was the same sound, I don't know why they had to write two tickets when, you know, one certainly...
Well, why write one when two will do?
It seemed like a way of really discouraging people from having a table or showing a video on the sidewalk. Or even perhaps, in your case, Joe, of just helping to carry a table and moving a battery seemed to cause you to fall into the realm of suspicious activity and one likely to be cited.
Any words to the free radio audience, Joe, about this whole incident? Any thoughts?
No, I'm just glad you dismissed it.
After an hour and a half in court, of course.
I'm so glad you guys showed up.
It was interesting that Mulligan, not only, when I say the referee Mulligan, who I'm told is going to retire, all of us are counting the hours, nonetheless, even though you heard, perhaps some of you heard your previous interview, there was Julie, the attorney, had a favorable view of referee John Mulligan. I, of course, don't call him meat grinder Mulligan for nothing. Some would say meathead Mulligan. That would be, I think, unfair.
There's always maximum Mulligan.
Or maximum mullet over Mulligan. Actually, he doesn't really mullet over that much. I noticed he was holding people in, as I mentioned before, he was having a mugshot Mulligan. Anyway, let's not get personal here. The issue, though, is, I mean, this referee, of course, is notorious. For example, the first thing he told us all was he wanted to make sure that there was no criticism of the court, and he didn't want to hear anyone say that an officer was lying. He said this at the beginning of his statement. Do you remember that, Joe? Joe, do you remember his saying he did not want to hear anyone say that an officer is lying? He didn't like that idea. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah, I made that note. He actually made that comment that somehow it would be inappropriate to exercise your First Amendment right to say that an officer is lying in court. And then he also said, you should not even make such commentary in the hallway, but you can go outside the building and say that. So Referee Mulligan has given us First Amendment permission outside the courthouse. I wanted to thank John for that that stipulation. He also, of course, was holding trials in the absence of defendants, finding them guilty and fining them in circumstances where normally people get a warrant. They get, you know, they may be put in jail for not showing up in court. They may get a failure to appear. But a trial in absentia, that's an interesting, maybe it's part of the new Patriot Act, the local. We should talk to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee about that.
I was kind of amazed at that because I haven't seen that, a trial proceeding with the defendant not present. So if you're out there, Mr. Jefter, you just were found today guilty of having a dog prohibited on its beach. I don't know your amount that you're fined on that. Stephen Nakatura, you were found guilty of having an open container on Pacific Avenue. And then up on and Corey Norby up at the UCSC campus, you've been found guilty of running a stop sign, but ironically and luckily for you, you were found innocent of, or not guilty, of having a loud motorcycle with a big cam and modified equipment, which the UCSC officer chased you down on his bicycle for this loud motorcycle, but referee Mulligan said, quote, "Just saying it's loud doesn't make the case," unquote. This is a case that he found him not guilty on that.
This is the same referee Mulligan at a somewhat different standard of volume in the case of a man playing a radio in his vehicle, right?
Yeah, it's when Officer Gunther testified that he heard heavy metal music coming out of a vehicle on Pacific Avenue. And Mulligan was completely convinced it was plenty loud enough for a citation, even though the defendant was present in that case and pleaded not guilty and didn't. He was concerned because he basically plays his music pretty much the same volume all over town and never had any problem before. And he asked the officer, Gunther, directly, he says, well, if I was in different part of town, would I be ticketed? And Gunther says, no.
So there you have it, selective enforcement at the City Council on Pacific Avenue and in the courtrooms of referee John Mulligan. Thank you, Observer Becky Johns.
Sure.
One last thing, Becky. You stated that you were in court when the officer did not show up, but the defendant did. Instead of dismissing the case, as he's supposed to do, what did referee Mulligan do?
Oh, he offered to lower the fine. Instead of $135, he says, well, how about if I only charge you, if only fine you $35?
You've got to keep those fines coming in. You got to really hand it to referee Mulligan. He keeps those fines rolling, even when the cops don't show up.
Well, trials in absentia of defendants, that's amazing.
And in absentia of officers, too, apparently.
And in absentia, the testifying
officer. He's trying
officer.
To keep the wheels of justice rolling. These are hard economic times. Referee Mulligan has to be appreciated.
No log jam in his court.
No
they
way, man.
Flow through just like
don't
diarrhea.
Don't say the cop is lying or your history. It's contempt of court for you, and don't try to say it unless you are well out of his courtroom and possibly down the street.
I don't understand that safety belt thing. Having no safety belt on, I've already been fined for that. It's only $28. So when he said, I'm lowering that down to $28, that's what he cost anyway.
Well, you probably don't understand. He could give you $28 and a slap on the chops. No, he's being very generous. We're outside.
Boomer.
Call your broker to check on a rumor that could cause you to lose your good humor. When you read your next statement, you
might go really psycho. Savings.
Your investments are now misbehaving. Your retirement prospects are caving. If you put all your money in WorldCom stocks and Tyco, you need some help with your 401k. It's flying lower than TWA. If you buck stock in these, you'll retire with ease. If you really like mac and cheese,
go tell how last year that you thought it was so swell to sink every last dime in AOL. When they merged with Time Warner, they said,
you got nailed.
You need some help with your 401k. You played roulette with your
IRA.
Once your nest egg was fat, now you wear paper hats and say,
would you like fries with that?
You'll have to live at the YMCA.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes,
Bathrop Spears Broadsides. There we go. Even I have trouble saying it sometimes. You can give us a call. We got open phone line here. Not lines, but line 427-3772. 427-3772. You've been listening to some of the Capitol Steps, and you'll be hearing more of them between Iraq and a Hard Place. I've gotten already one positive call from one listener who actually will be coming in the studio to do some commentary later in the show. We will be having Jennifer and Steve Argue chatting about a variety of subjects, ranging from the upcoming city council meeting day after tomorrow to, Steve Argue's pretrial for not moving along every 60 minutes on the avenue with a political table, for which he faces about a year in jail and a $1,000 fine as a potential maximum, probably less if he's convicted. But who knows? Steve has been convicted of other things before. He was convicted of assaulting a police officer when he defended a woman and a child in the Yugoslavia demonstration back in 1999. And even though the officer who grabbed the child and who Steve punched out, or didn't punch him out, just punched him, in order to secure the woman's release and to stop the abuse that was going on, was found guilty of excessive force, Steve still spent 7 months in jail, and he's run for city council a number of times, and he is an outspoken voice on a number of subjects, and so is Jennifer, big time. So they'll be here later to talk more on these subjects. Here's some more tape actually coming at you soon. Before we do that, though, I want to make a few announcements. Today, the Mime Troupe, of course, will be performing in the park, San Lorenzo Park. I guess 2:30 there's sort of music, and 3 o'clock is when they start on the grass. And it's supposed to be a great show. It's Veronique of the Mounties and Operation Frozen Freedom. I haven't seen it. Don't know if I'm going to have a chance to see it. I'm not sure. But you might want to take this opportunity. Tomorrow, as I mentioned before, does the city council have, is the city council and the city departments applying for Homeland Security funding from the government with those invisible strings attached? I put in a Public Records Act request 10 days ago, and I should be getting some information, which I'll be passing on to you. I also understand there's a Green Party assembly coming up at the Loudoun Nelson Center. And actually, what I'm going to try to do right now is I'm going to try to get a hold of Green Party activist Thomas Levitt and see if he actually has any news on this subject. Let's see what we got here. He is around. Should be ringing. Hello? No. There we go. We got a ring. Let's see if we can get a Thomas Levitt on the phone here. Hello? Hello, Thomas Levitt?
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, we're looking for Thomas Levitt. He also ran for city council.
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, Thomas, you're on free radio, probably just waking up. Thomas, you have a Green Party meeting coming up tomorrow. Any news for our listeners on what's likely to be happening there or what we should be concerned about?
I believe that the most likely topic is some discussion of whatever is going on with the recall and the Peter Camayo campaign for governor. I am not aware of what else might be on the agenda, but you can go to the SantaCruzGreenParty.org and click around there to find out if there's been anything posted about what might be discussed.
And what time does this meeting happen?
It happens at 7 o'clock at the Loudoun Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Loudoun Nelson Center. And are members of the public invited?
Anybody can attend a Green Party meeting. Obviously, you have to be a member of the Green Party to actually vote. And although we usually don't actually use vote, we use a process called consensus, where everybody kind of just talks until we all agree.
Or until Paul Franklin decides it's not a fit subject for discussion. There is a way, essentially, that a small group, actually one person, can veto it in the consensus process. I guess you have an 80% rule after that.
You need an 80% supermajority to override consensus. That's actually a fairly rare event in my experience. Mm-hmm. At which point, if you've it goes to Green Party members who've attended a certain number of meetings. So if you really want to make a difference, show up consistently.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that the Green Party, at your initiative, has in the past passed resolutions supporting the one-time Camp Paradise, opposing political surveillance on the mall, things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I guess you've been kind of occupied with economic and personal issues,
yes,
that have been kind of taking up your time. But there's also budget issues in the city coming up. Is the city budget coming up for a final, we're giving it all away to the police department, gala on Tuesday?
So the city budget is coming up for, I believe it's final passage on Tuesday, and there's all sorts of things on the agenda. Some of you might be aware, Christopher Cron has pointed out that the city manager has a hidden political agenda, or maybe not so hidden, that basically devalues anything outside of what he regards as essential city services. And this is not really news. If anybody who's read the city manager's budget reports over the past few years, or particularly when Major P was up from renewal, would recognize that the city manager essentially thinks that a lot of what people regard as essential city services, the Civic Center and Loudoun Nelson and social service funding for the homeless, et cetera, is essentially fluff in our city manager's mind. If it isn't cops and firefighters and, quote-unquote core city services, it's not really important. And so everything from, the city's, this city budget right now is tossing 30, 40, 50-year traditions of city funding and involvement out the window. Everything from 6 hours and 40 minutes worth of Arts Commission staffing to basically how many hours Loudoun Nelson is going to be available, Civic Center, pool, anything and everything you can think of is basically up for being given the axe. Whereas, the police department and firefighters and et cetera, they're not being asked to live within their means and absorb increased costs. They're just being given an unlimited and unconstrained increase in the percentage of the city budget that they're going to consume.
I'm looking over the city council agenda for Tuesday. That's mm-hmm. There's of course a 3 o'clock session and a 7 o'clock session. I'm finding lots of ordinances, lots of nasty stuff. Here we go. Item 46 is the fiscal year 2004 budget,
mm-hmm.
and we have the recommendations for social service program funding, and then the budget balancing plan
mm-hmm.
phase two.
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked over these documents?
Well, if you've read anything about what the city council members have been saying.
Well, they've been meeting secretly with two budget subcommittees, one of them called the Facilities mm-hmm. Committee, the other one called the, it has a second name, but these are committees that have been meeting mm-hmm. privately, even though there are three city council members on each committee, without any public input or public observation
mm-hmm.
throughout the month of August. Any comments on that?
This is rather typical of this city council's approach, and you can go all the way back to the first time that the city council really put the hammer to the nail, so to speak, when they decided to kill the crossing guard program. And Mike Rotkin said if 100 people showed up the next week to protest it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference as to how he's going to vote. You know, I've become somewhat skeptical about the willingness of the city council to be swayed by public concern or input on this. You can also look at exactly how much attention they paid to Skin's carefully prepared set of reasonably modest, you know, progressive recommendations, you know, including taking a small chunk out of Dick Wilson, our city manager's $160,000 a year paycheck.
It wasn't really a chop from the top budget. It was more a pair the fingernails of the beast budget, right?
Yes. Well, the city council has paid no attention to those recommendations either, even though there's three of seven Skin endorsed city council members sitting on the city council.
Has Skin moved perhaps to condemn, sanction, or recall those three members?
I have no idea.
How about the Green Party and its fine Mayor Fitzmaurice, no longer mayor, actually, Councilmember Fitzmaurice, who has been regularly violating the Green Party platform on no anti-homeless laws for the last 4 years?
Well, he failed to obtain the endorsement of the Green Party.
But they couldn't quite see that way clear to censuring him or to specifically calling for his recall, right?
Can you recall a city council member?
Sure, of course you can. You can recall. You got to get 20% of the signatures on the ballot, you know, to get it on the petition, on the, get the election. But you can. In fact, there was a recall for Mo Reisch. There was a recall for Wormhout Reisch and I guess Don Lane back in 1989, and it didn't quite make the ballot, but they were pretty close.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I have to think about that.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I mean, it's a real possibility. Well, I mean, if you have the backing of rich Republicans, it's a certainty.
Well, yes. So, but basically, you know, what it boils down to, and you know, I'm going to take a look at this. I leave messages for city council members, etc. But you know, what this city council has made it pretty clear is that everything else in the city is going to suffer.
Well, let me
so that the increased cost of you know, paying for you know, the retirement passages of the city's police and firefighters, mostly, you know, doesn't actually come out of the existing budget for those two departments. There's a really good article in the Mid-County Post, which is available online at mcpost.com, which goes into the whole city budget thing in detail.
Mm-hmm. I think I read that, actually.
And it has a really good explanation of the difference between, you know, the former retirement package and the current retirement package.
That's a huge boondoggle for police and fire employees, as I understand.
Yeah.
3% at 50, you get to retire.
Versus 2% at 55. So the difference is something like getting $30,000 a year at 55 for the rest of your life versus getting $45,000 a year at 50 for the rest of your life.
Well, when I raised that issue at City Council last summer, I think it was either Scott Kennedy or Mike Rotkin blamed Gray Davis and then moved right along. There's also, by the way, in this recommendation, I'm looking at the recommendations regarding social service program funding for fiscal year 2004. As part of its discussion in adopting this year's budget, City Council directed the Social Services Program Committee to develop recommendations to reduce expenditures by 10%, or about $177,000. City Council also directed that any across-the-board cut be no greater than 3%. Other cuts needed to achieve the 10% overall reduction would be made to individual programs. And they are apparently on August 28th, the Social Services Program Committee, which is an open committee, and you were able to go to that. I didn't get to it. Met to develop its recommendations on how to reduce the SSP budget as directed by the City Council. And considering how to view the closure of the Good Beginnings Center, the SSP Committee discussed whether to consider the new Nueva Vista Center, that's the Dolphin Lee Boondoggle Project, as essentially a continuation of the Good Beginnings program and provide funding as requested by Community Bridges or consider a new program. Anyway, they discussed how to achieve the remaining $79,000 in cuts, and they're recommending, they're approving a recommendation to return to the general fund the $97,000 committed to the Good Beginnings Toddler Center and cut 3% across the board from all social service programs. The motion passed 2-1. Doesn't say who the two were. Scott Kennedy is the vice mayor and the chair of the social service program, and the recommendations would reduce the social service budget by $150,350. Any comment on that?
Well, the City Council has made it pretty clear what its priorities are when it's having the public safety budget increased by $1.7 million, in the middle of a huge budget crisis, and social service budget, being lopped by 10%. On that Gray Davis thing, and if people are thinking about how they're going to vote on the recall, Gray Davis's love for law enforcement and this law and order stuff, and for a generous contract to the prison guards and other folks like that, he's the one that came up with this 3% at 50 in 1999. Mm-hmm. So you can blame Gray Davis for the mess in Sacramento. And he's also partially responsible for the mess down here.
However, the City Council didn't have to accept that as its offer either. They did.
They did not have to accept it, although...
Did you follow that debate at that time, Thomas?
No.
We're talking with Thomas Levitt, by the way, and you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3.
No, I did not. I was... at that point, I was... my energy was focused on the... other stuff, business, and
no problem.
I just become engaged with the Homeless Issues Task Force towards the end of that year.
The Homeless Issues Task Force farce, I remember that, where the only recommendation they accepted was more police, Sergeant Eric Seeley, or I should say Officer Eric Seeley. There's also a fiscal year 2004 budget balancing plan. I guess this is the Dick Wilson plan. Dick Wilson, that's City Manager for Life, Dick Wilson. Suggesting that the City Council will have to make $6 million in cuts to the general fund and a reduction of over 50 positions, and they want to end the current fiscal year with a balanced budget to avoid further drawing down of the city's general fund balance. Mm-hmm. They've directed the city manager to return in September with a budget reduction plan, and what they have here, as I view this, the police department will get a reduction of $345,000, includes two additional patrol officer positions, a property attendant position, as well as other reductions in capital outlay, travel, meeting expenses, background investigation. CJC, that's Criminal Justice Council, has agreed to operate without a paid staff. The reduction in patrol officer positions is expected to occur through attrition as positions become vacant. Fire department will get a reduction of $123,000, eliminating the administrative fire captain position. The Public Works Department gets a total of $344,000 reduction, eliminating a half-time engineering technician, transfer of a transportation coordinator, defunding an engineer technician position. Planning Department gets a $94,000 reduction. Parks and Rec gets a $546,000 reduction, includes eliminating 6.7 full-time equivalent positions, including park maintenance manager, three parks crew leaders, wharf maintenance crew leader, a couple of others. Additional recommendation reductions include $35,000 in art grants, $10,000 in temporary staff for the Art Commission, Public Arts, and Sister Cities Committees, and funding for city-sponsored special events such as Shark Festival, Santa at the Wharf, Caroling at the Wharf, Firecracker 10K, July 4th Senior Barbecue, with a savings of $23,050. Budget balancing involves approximately $800,000 in additional revenues, no doubt they plan from their Park Anywhere, Pay for the Privilege, the thing that's going to go into effect on January 1st.
Well, no, that's supposed to, actually...
Just pay for itself, probably, right?
Exactly.
You know, I don't see Loudoun Nelson Center closing on here. Do you know anything about that? Has that been dumped?
According to the Mid-County Post, they're not going to permanently close anything. They're just going to reduce the operating hours of everything, increase fees, and perhaps further commercialize things. Does it say anything specific about what the revenue increases are going to be?
Only
one that I've been aware of is the administrative fee for the 911 service.
Staff will return to City Council for approval of fee increases for the Fire Department and Planning Department. The Planning Department fee increases in implementation of a general plan maintenance fee are scheduled for this agenda. In addition, a revision to the city's cost allocation plan for general fund administration costs is expected to increase revenues by $100,000. Finally, we will again implement a holiday closure program for an expected savings of $75,000. Now, my question here, I guess, considering this whole report, is it looks like most of the cuts are coming from Parks and Rec and the police and the Public Works departments, followed up after that, well, and the Police Department. Mm-hmm. Police Department gets $345,000 cut, they say.
Well,
what is this $345,000 cut? How does that square up with the $1.7 million increase you said you were speaking of?
Well, there's the $1.7 million, and then it's going to increase again the next year. Well, that's because
I know why it's happening because of the 3% at 50 boondoggle that Davis initiated and that the City Council wagging its tail followed up on.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is now, what, you know, are we fair in talking and saying that the Police Department is not, and the Parks and Rec, which is not just, you know, maintaining our beautiful parks, but also involves a lot of policing functions in those parks, and that's a particularly concern to poor and homeless people in the parks. Aren't they getting a lot of cuts, too? I mean, I don't want to be, misinforming the public that the police are getting this huge budget increase while everybody else is getting slashed to death. I guess it is true. There is a...
Well, basically speaking...
10% cut in social services.
Basically speaking, there's nothing nice or pleasant about any portion of this budget. And
what would you recommend as an alternative?
The city council doesn't have an easy job. But so what happens here is, just take some arbitrary numbers. The exclusive of all the retirement stuff, the city council gives the police department, say, $15 million, right? Retirement costs, benefits, and other things drive that cost up to $16 million, just to pick another arbitrary number. It's after those costs have gone up to $16 million that the $345,000 comes out, where they like actually lay off staff or eliminate positions.
Well, I mean, I notice that they're not talking about a 10% cut in the police department, a 10% cut in the fire department, a 10% cut in the public works department.
Mm-mm.
So, I mean, I'm not even sure. They're not telling us in here what percentages are being cut from these departments, nor are they telling us the total amount of money that's being cut from social services. So it's not clear to me. This report is misleadingly, or should we say, it's not very clearly written, so we can't understand what our other options might be if we wanted an alternative.
Well,
am I being unfair here to the poor city council and the city council staff?
Certainly, the city council, the city staff could invest more energy in.
Well, I mean, all they got to do is write it in a way that is sort of parallel, so we understand, well, this is how much money they're proposing to cut from each of these departments. This is the percentage that's being cut, instead of giving us the percentage in one case and the money in the other. It sounds like they're trying to conceal something, you know. I mean,
well,
maybe I'm just paranoid.
It's definitely, not a document that's going to be, that's in a tremendous amount of effort's been put into making it clear for the 20 people who will actually show up, or maybe 200. That would be.
This is item 46 on the afternoon agenda for those who want to be present at the city council meeting. Let me double check to make sure I'm giving you the right information here about when it is.
Well, I would also point out that
No, it's the evening agenda. I'm sorry. It looks like. Let me double check here. Yeah, it's the evening session, 7 p.m., and it says specifically.
This is item 45 and 46, our city council administrative business. Mm-hmm. One is the cutting the social... 46, actually, is the item. Social service cuts and balancing the budget. I'm sorry, Thomas, you were going to say.
Well, you know, what have you heard from your city council members, quote-unquote, say the progressive ones? Are they proposing an alternative budget? Are they proposing to do anything more like pick away at the margins of what the city manager has prepared? What kind of leadership on these issues are they displaying? Have they called for the public to show up and participate and make their views heard? What of these types of activities that you might expect from a city council member that, say, disagreed with some of the expressed priorities in the city budget? And, you know, the answer is, I mean, I haven't been, like, you know, obsessively following this because...
Not a word, as far as I know. Not a word.
Yeah, it seemed to be preordained what the results...
I mean, you know, also, why are they? Why isn't one city council member even opposing the secret hearings that are being held in August on the issue? I mean, while it's true, the Social Service Committee has an open meeting, and that's only because it's a regular committee. I'm sure if they had their say, if Kennedy had his druthers, they'd keep it closed because, you know, that's what's happened with these other meetings, and that we haven't heard a peep of criticism from Ed Porter or anybody else on this issue. At least I haven't. So, I mean, you say progressive council members. Of course,
yeah.
That's a contradiction in terms. There's no progressive council members there. We had two progressives running in the last election, you and Argue, and you both got defeated. So, obviously, the community doesn't want your kind in office there, Leather. Why don't you go home and go back to bed?
Well, I think it's more like the resources and timing were less than perfect for,
Well, if you're constantly raging on the streets with ne'er-do-wells like that that Huff character, you know, I saw you down on the corner of Cooper and Pacific standing on a soapbox. I mean, what is your thing, Levitt?
Actually, talking to people directly on the street. But, you know, there are people listening to this, and... they could impact this process.
What do you suggest?
Well,
trooping down to city council yet again. I guess if you're ever going to troop down, you want to catch them before they ram through the budget. Then that's going to happen in the 7 o'clock session to Tuesday night.
Yeah, and
you can also call the council 420-5020.
I mean, let's put it this way: the people who have the strongest vested interest. And what's happening here have been bending the ear of the city council almost 24/7 for the past 6 months. The people who dropped the $500 checks into campaign accounts or whatever the limit is at this point, you know, are clearly going to make their views heard.
So we better make our views heard.
So, yes, you make your views heard, because believe it or not, the city council, if there is a massive public outcry on a particular issue, you won't change the whole thing, but it could save one or two things.
Yeah, I think a sufficient...
you know...
Yeah, we've seen that, for example, even in such a trivial thing as juggling... where suddenly a massive protest starts to emerge, suddenly Councilmember Rotkin discovers there's an emergency and changes the law very quickly. So I agree with you, Tom.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's even the potential. I mean, there is another election coming up next fall for four city council members.
Not next fall, you mean a year from now? Yeah, next fall, okay.
Right, it is, believe it.
2004. Mm-hmm.
And how many did we elect last fall?
Three. We're talking to Thomas Levitt, and I think that's about all we got time for,
yeah.
Thomas. Any final words?
Um,
No problem.
I
know it's Sunday morning. Thank you for getting out of bed to talk with us.
And it's the Santa Cruz City Council, so what can you say?
Hey.
All right.
You've said some of it. Thanks a lot, Thomas.
Right. Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm George W. Bush, the President of the United States. But on a more serious note, I'm sure you've heard that recently we have found weapons of mass destruction among the axis of evildoers. Somewhere between here and somewhere else. But right now, Vice President Cheney is going to help me out with my weekly geography briefing, all right? Now, Dick, don't give me any hints. I think I got this one, all right? There's a country outside the U.S. that has caused quite a stir. Korea.
Korea, Korea, Korea.
Now, I know that it's important that I say the word nuclear, not nuclear.
Korea. Korea, Korea, Korea. Korea, Korea,
Korea. We've learned there are nukes in Korea. Before opening my mouth, is it the North or South that's bad?
Korea, look on the map for North Korea.
I will keep them in check.
You're pointing to Quebec.
My bad, Eureka. Here's a plan to show I'm no moron. I'll just get Iraq to declare war on Korea. How's that for a brilliant idea?
Axis is back with Iran and Streisand and Sean Penn.
Sean Penn, I know that name. Isn't that the capital of
Korea?